Welcome, everyone, to the Investing in Real Estate Show, one of the top-rated business podcasts in the world. Thank you so much for pushing our subscriber numbers way up. And I think we just actually, in Overcast, eclipsed the Dave Ramsey Show. So thanks, everyone, for listening. It's a beautiful, beautiful October Wednesday. Thank you so much for dialing us up. You know, very often I'm asked to be a guest on other people's shows, and we don't play them a lot here, and I don't know why. And my team said, hey, we've got a lot of great content from some great podcasts where you were a guest on other shows. We should play some of those and share the love. And I said, yes, absolutely. Where has my head been? So recently, Keith Weinhold over at the Get Rich podcast was kind enough to have me on as a guest. He's a real estate investor, and he knows a thing or two about leverage. So we spent quite a bit of time talking about how to maximize your passive income and finding different ways of leveraging to buy more properties. And that's exactly what we do at my company, Morris Invest, help people buy their first property with leverage, you know, with non-recourse financing built into the property. So it allows you to buy more properties. So anyway, we had a long-ranging discussion about this, and he and I are very aligned on these messages about building wealth. So it was a great conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. So sit back. Here I am with Keith Weinhold on the Get Rich podcast. Take a listen.
Until just recently, our guest today was a news anchor on the number one cable news show in the entire world. When he wasn't interviewing presidential candidates, he's been building his successful real estate investing business and helping investors buy their first investment property and build financial freedom. After some epic failures, he's learned how to build a meaningful life, and he shares these lessons on his top-rated podcast, Investing in Real Estate with Clayton Morris. Welcome to Get Rich Education, Clayton Morris.
Hey, thanks so much, Keith. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Clayton, so you really went from a point in your life where you were drowning in debt, and you have turned that all the way around into financial freedom. So just quickly take us through that journey.
You know, it was a little scary, as you could imagine, but I'd lived all across the country in the television business, and I was always sending out money to other people. You know, I was renting, and I didn't quite understand it at the time, but I wasn't really building wealth. You know, I was making other people wealthy by renting from them and moving around the country. And I finally moved to Florida, and I bought my first place, my single one-bedroom condo on the golf course. Bought it at like $70,000 or so, and that was my first. You know, back then you could get like 100% financing. And then a property next door opened up to me, and I was able to purchase that one. I bought it off market and was able to do the renovations myself. And I sold both of them. I made a really nice profit on both of them. But then, this was still before the crash, I did what I didn't know, which was speculative land stuff. And I ended up buying into this like Phil Mickelson golf course community. And I was going to fund the construction of these properties and all of this stuff. And then everything collapsed. And the builder backed out and Phil Mickelson backed out. And I lost all this money. And I still held the piece of land that was probably only worth $5,000. And it was just ridiculous. And then I ended up having to go through a foreclosure. So I come into Fox News one morning. I had just arrived there really and just started working there and about 10 years ago. And I came in, I went down to the commissary downstairs to buy a cup of coffee, and my debit card didn't work. I said, what? And they said, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't have any other way of buying the coffee. So I just left it, went upstairs to my office, logged into my Bank of America accounts, and they were all blinking red at me. Everything had been like frozen in a deficiency judgment based on this piece of land that the whole community went under and collapsed. I ended up going through this whole legal issue. And so I had everything taken from me, basically, and I credit ruined and wasn't able to buy anything. And so that's kind of where it all started for me. That was like that moment of rock bottom. I just took a deep breath and said, okay, I guess it's all up from here, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And for those that don't know, we're talking about the mortgage meltdown and the financial crisis of 2008, 2009 that a lot of people got caught up in. A lot of smart people even got caught up in that. Well, since Clayton, it really seems like your focus has been not so much on flipping properties, but more on buy and hold, which is kind of the space that I operate in. So just tell us why you choose buy and hold and why you've migrated away from things like flipping properties.
It all started for me on a flight to New Zealand. At the time, I had just gone through this foreclosure issue and I didn't have any credit, so I was just saving money. I just was like putting money in a savings account because I didn't know what else to do with it. And I was still working the job, you know, for a paycheck and working those long hours up at 4 a.m. and hosting a show. And I had the opportunity to take a flight to New Zealand to see my friend who's a photographer in New Zealand. And he invited me to stay at his place and I could go for like 5 days. And so I'm on this flight, next to me, sitting seated next to me are two individuals who were in their 50s or so. And we got to talking after the 15-hour flight. And they said, how long are you going to be there? I said, oh, about 5 days. And I said, what about you guys? And they said, oh, we're going to be there for 2 months in New Zealand. I said, 2 months? I said, what do you do that you can go to New Zealand for 2 months? And he looked at me straight face. He said, oh, I'm a real estate investor. I said, aha. I said, okay, great. So I grabbed a pen, piece of paper from the steward or flight attendant, whatever we, and I just started scrolling down notes. I said, tell me everything. He said, well, I do buy and hold real estate. My partner and I find properties. We don't care about real estate at all. He said, we don't fall in love with real estate. We fall in love with ROI and return on investment. Remember, and he pointed to Rich Dad, you know, he's like, remember, we're creating assets. We're buying assets that are going to produce for us for the rest of our life. And so that for me was what turned everything around. I said, great. Tell me where you're buying properties, how you're buying them, what price point, you know, and he was like, oh, we buy single family homes and here's how we do it. I said, why am I going to reinvent the wheel? So I landed, got back home after the week and immediately started buying two properties. I bought two rental properties. They've been producing for me ever since, 3-bedroom, 1-bath houses in Michigan, and built a team over the years, but I've never looked back. That was my template. People say to me, why not do commercial properties? Why not do mobile home parks? Why not do all these other things? And I said, you know what? Because this is what's gotten me here to financial freedom, and I'm going to continue to do what's worked for me.
Right. And to some extent, flipping properties is a job, and buy and hold when you've outsourced your management is not a job. Flipping properties, to some extent, one can still be trading their time for dollars, selling their time for money. Well, oftentimes, that's the same world and the same mindset that they were trying to escape when they were at their day job. And I love how you say that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think that's what makes real estate investing quite different. You don't need a formal education. You don't need any certification. And you really don't even need any 100% original entrepreneurial idea. You can follow a template that someone else has laid out in front of you.
Exactly. And it's very, very simple. A lot of famous real estate investors, millionaires, never went to college. They learned from their parents how to think like a wealthy investor. And so they began it when they were 19, 20, whatever, purchasing their first property. And they didn't bother with going $80,000 in debt by going to university. They don't have college degrees. And so it's a very straightforward approach. I mean, it's not complicated at all. That's what I try to teach on my podcast. It's what I try to teach on our website. It's what my wife and I really try to do with our videos. It's that we want to help people shake that paradigm of thinking poor, thinking from a place of unconsciousness about wealth building. It's so tragic, really, about the way, if you listen to the way in which people talk to their children about money, it sets them on a path that I was sent on. I was raised my whole life to fear money. You know, that money doesn't grow on trees. We're not the Rockefellers. We can't afford that.
Right.
And so I always had this perception of money as the enemy.
That's right. It's that scarcity mindset that parents reinforce. And basically, it's the mindset that says financial betterment means cutting expenses rather than increasing income. But I think we know that increasing income is the answer. And it's so great to do it with real estate. And you said something important a couple minutes ago, Clayton. You said something that I believe, and I often say, don't fall in love with real estate. Real estate is just a vehicle. I don't love real estate. I love what real estate can do for me. Come on, real estate itself, it's plywood, drywall, window glass, concrete, copper wire. You know, what is there to love? Well, the thing to love is the passive income that gives you and the time that that opens up. And it really all comes down to kind of these touchy-feely things that time has opened up for you, like peace, joy, happiness, love, and freedom. It certainly isn't loving real estate itself.
Right. I mean, I don't really love real estate at all. All my houses are the same. You know, I've got the same vinyl flooring in there. They're not going to win any Southern Style Design Magazine awards. You know, they're all like 900 square feet, single family homes. And I pressure wash the stuff on the siding. I put on an update the roof, put in new mechanicals, put in new windows, you know, put in new electric, new plumbing. But again, you're not going to see them as in a magazine, in a multi-million dollar beachfront property that people are featuring in some celebrity's magazine.
Right. And, you know, I think another reason it's important not to fall in love with real estate is I don't think about holding on to my real estate for many decades or for generations. Again, this is just a vehicle that produces an outcome and a lifestyle. If you fall in love with real estate, you might be reluctant to 1031 exchange out of it or do a cash out refi with it. And, you know, you just don't want to get that caught up in it. These things are expendable. These are just conduits to something better. And sometimes you can replace that with a better conduit.
Oh, you hit on something great, Keith, which is I hear this a lot. You know, when we have investors who call our office, we talk to them. And one of the things this happens a lot. I call it the lure of the first property syndrome. And you'll find that like husband and wife, young couple, they live in Philadelphia. They live out, you know, in a place called Manayunk, right? I'll never forget this couple. This is indicative of so many of the couples I've spoken to.
Okay.
They live in this little townhouse that they bought in Manayunk, Philadelphia, just outside of the city. And it's beautiful, you know, beer houses down the street and great restaurants and so forth. And so they bought this place. Now it's a little too small because they're having kids, right? So they're going to move out. They move out to the suburbs a little further. But you know what? They love this place, so they keep it. They turn it into a rental property. Well, the numbers are upside down. So I asked them on the phone. I said, you know, we held on to it, and we think in 15 years it'll be cash flow positive. We'll be able to, you know. And so I said, well, just give me the numbers. And I grab the calculator. I go through the numbers, and I'm telling them, like, look, you're actually losing money every year on this property because you haven't accounted for your taxes. You haven't accounted for this, your HOA fees, all of these other things. You're just in love with this property. If this property were mine, I would immediately be calling up a realtor and getting this property sold, 1031 exchange this thing over into some higher return rental properties. And they said, yeah, you know, it's just that we fell in love with this property and we just thought, well, we should hold on to it. But I'm like, you're never going to move back into it. They said, no. But they're just holding on to it because they fell in love with it. Huge mistake.
It is totally a mistake, and it's really easy to do. It's almost a human condition to have that happen to you. And I've hung out in Manayunk. It is a fun place, and it is a nice place to potentially own real estate if you're only going to live in it yourself. And I think it comes down to an emotional response. So when you want to go ahead and live in your own primary residence, well, feelings might trump facts, and it doesn't make complete financial sense. My home sure doesn't. But when it comes to income property, facts have to trump feelings, and the opportunity cost that they're paying by holding on to that, hoping it might cash flow in 15 years, why don't you just trade that for something that will cash flow now? Elevate your quality of life for the next 15 years and beyond. That's the bottom line. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. That's sort of the end of the conduit right there. Don't fall in love with real estate.
Exactly. It's just a building, four walls. I treat them like potato chips. You can't eat just one.
Right. Don't get emotions behind potato chips or investment real estate. Well, Clayton, you found a niche within certain neighborhoods that's more profitable than others. And kind of in real estate, we have different classes of neighborhoods. We have A class, B class, and C class. Some people even break that down to D class. So I think everyone's got their different definitions of the types, but how do you define the different classes? And then what do you find most profitable and why?
Well, I love C class neighborhoods. I find them to be the most stable. And I'm a history buff. I was a historian in college. I went, got my history degree. So when you look at the crash, right, you look at the areas that experienced stability, where people did not lose their jobs, i.e. renters in these particular neighborhoods. These were C-class neighborhoods near the hospitals, right? Near the local FedEx distribution hub. This is where they work, right? At the post office, those service-based jobs. Those people did not lose their jobs. Even Forbes magazine had a cover story 2 weeks ago on this exact point. They said, there's a misconception about Detroit that everyone lost their jobs. Not true. So my renters did not lose their jobs. It was the A-class neighborhoods where people lost their jobs. It was the, you know, high-rise apartments in New York City that suddenly had to drop their rent from $4,200 a month down to $2,200 a month because those people lost their jobs on Wall Street and those big banks and so forth. So it's not the person who's delivering the milk that loses their job. It's the person who tells the delivery man where to deliver the milk that loses their job. And so that, to me, is a foundation of how I invest, which is I want to be in those same neighborhoods. We're in a great economy right now, right? But what happens when things go down? Well, guess what? People are still going to need to rent, but they might not likely be able to rent $4,200 a month. So now they're going to have to rent for $3,500 a month or $2,800 a month. I don't want to be anywhere near those expensive rental properties that are, you know, A-class properties like that, where you have all of these moving parts. You have the worst tenants. I believe A-class tenants are the worst tenants, and they cause the most problems, the biggest headaches. They're the most entitled. And there's just a lot of moving parts, garage door openers and air conditioning units and all of those things that I don't have in my properties, right? My properties are sort of bulletproof. my tenants, they buy their own appliances. So there's like very few moving parts in my properties. You drive down my neighborhoods where I buy my properties, everyone's at work during the day. It's pretty boring. They're small, you know, 900 square foot homes, tree lined street. Everyone's at work. That's like a typical neighborhood for me. I think being from the coast, a lot of times, whether you're from San Francisco or from New York City or something, you have this sort of coastal elite bias about what could you possibly buy for $50,000? No way.
Right.
Right. Come on. That's going to be some little shack with, but guess what? That's how most of America lives. So try to come outside of your coastal elitism for a minute and realize that people want to live in these homes that have a yard and a driveway, be near the school that they can walk to, the charter school, be near the hospital where they work. And that's most of America. So that's where I invest.
That's where I play as well. Those C-class neighborhoods, those lower-end neighborhoods, but not completely at the bottom, not completely in war zones. And those are the ones that tend to be recession-resistant because people are always going to need a roof over their head.
Today's episode is brought to you by Zapier. If you're a small business, you know your to-do list is never ending. And you know you could automate many of the tasks that you do every day, but you don't know how to do it because you think, okay, I'm using Google Docs, but that can't possibly talk to my calendar, right? Or that couldn't possibly send me a text message to let me know that a new customer has signed up, right? No, you can absolutely do all of those things with Zapier. I've been using Zapier for years to run my business, and I wouldn't be able to run Morris Invest without it. So like, for instance, if someone comes to our website, goes to morrisinvest.com, and they book a free call with one of our team members, whether it's to set up a self-directed IRA or to learn more about rental real estate investing, it doesn't matter. That triggers an automation to let our team members know that it's going to go on the appropriate calendar so we can call that person at the right time. We want to be punctual. We want to be on time. And more importantly, those apps can talk to each other because Zapier sits in between them. And it connects. It's like a connector on the internet. And I've been using them for years. And you're going to try them out for free right now by going to zapier.com/investing for 14-day free trial. So it's Z-A-P-I-E-R, zapier.com/investing for free. It's an amazing way to automate your work. And frankly, Zapier is the easiest way to automate your work. Recently, I had a team member who joined our team and she started playing around with Zapier and she sent me a message. She said, holy smokes, I can't believe all of the things you can do, right? You could use MailChimp to talk to Google Docs. You could have Google Docs talk to your cell phone. It's amazing. Just go check them out and scratch the surface of what Zapier can do for you and your business. Zapier.com/investing.
Welcome back to Get Rich Education with our guest, Clayton Morris. Check him out at morrisinvest.com. Clayton, tell us about how to find your freedom number. What is a freedom number? How does that help you achieve financial freedom?
Well, first of all, if everyone's driving right now or you're at the gym or something, don't worry about it. If you just come to our website, if you go to morrisinvest.com, we give it away for free. It's just morrisinvest.com/freedom. It's 3 pages, totally free. Download it, and it could change your life. I mean, that's the goal because it changed mine. And so it was really born out of like a night of tears crying with my wife. And so the exact strategy that my wife and I came up with that night is what is in the freedom cheat sheet that I put together to help people. And she came to me in my office and she said, we can't pay the mortgage this month. We don't have enough money. I was a network news anchor for Fox News on the number one show in the world.
Wow.
Making a great salary. And I couldn't afford to pay the mortgage. Why? Because we weren't good with our money. We didn't know what our expenses were. We didn't know what was coming in, what was going out, like most people. And I had 2 rental properties I had purchased after my New Zealand trip. And we were just sitting there and I said, this is crazy. I said, what are we going to do? And I said, I just went through my closet, grabbed some jeans and an old camera. I'm like, I've got to like sell this on Craigslist to make our ends meet. So I literally went through, it was like selling old electronics out of my closet, like an old camera that I gotten for Christmas, like, you know, sad moment. And I said, we've got to stop this. What is going on here? So I jumped up on my whiteboard and I said, wait a second. We have these 2 properties that we paid all in. Total cost was like $45,000 after I spent, you know, $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 in rehab. They cash flow like $800 a month consistently. Now I said, what are our expenses? We didn't know. So we sat down And we went through our expenses and we came up with a number. Like, this is what our monthly expenses look like every month, like the average of them. Okay, now, what if we could figure out how many properties, how much passive income would it take for us to cover that monthly expense? And that is the freedom number.
Yeah, and that is asking yourself a great question.
Yeah, and it's scary because, first of all, a lot of people don't know. Once you start going through the freedom cheat sheet and you start like really analyzing the fact, you don't even know that you like are paying twice for Netflix, or you know what I mean? Like, you're going to find all this stuff that you're like, wait a second. You're going to be able to clean up a lot of your expenses that way, just becoming aware of it, putting it down on a spreadsheet and being aware of it. And then the other thing that I think I really try to drive home with in the freedom number is that when you ask people, how much money do you want to make? They'll be like, I want to make $1 million, right? That's what kids always say, right? I want to make $1 million. But it's a total arbitrary, meaningless number. What do you mean you want to make $1 million? Will you be rich then? I don't know. But what if you had income coming in that covers all of your monthly expenses and it's padded by like 10%? So if you want to do Christmas presents or take a trip, you're covered. You never have to worry about those expenses again because you have passive income coming in every month that covers it. That's freedom. That's becoming wealthy, not some arbitrary, meaningless number that you throw out there.
That's right. That's beginning with the end in mind. What do you really need? And then begin to work your way back. And part of working your way up there toward becoming a millionaire, and I think we can even debate if millionaire is even wealthy anymore. I really don't believe it is, just right. A net worth of simply $1 million. But you actually have a strategy of buying, owning, and then producing $1 million of cash flow. So tell us about that specific strategy, about building a very large passive income real estate portfolio with that path.
So if you're in your 30s right now, and you're frustrated, you're driving 2 hours to and from work, you've got a kid at home, two kids at home, and you're thinking about, how do I build wealth, right? You have that rich dad, poor dad philosophy. I grew up with the poor dad philosophy, which is you work hard, you get a raise every few years. That's how you build wealth, put money into a 401k. That's the exact wrong way to build wealth. Wealthy people think about building wealth as accumulating assets and accumulating net worth. So if you're in a room with like really rich people, the thing that they're focused on is net worth. They're not focused on the fiddly stuff and the paycheck. Right? They're focused on the net worth. Like, what does my balance sheet look like? What am I worth on paper? Right? You hear that a lot. The thing that real estate investors make the mistake of doing is they think about cash flow first, which the cash flow is nice. And that's always the goal at the end. But those three stages, there's the three stages of real estate investing that I talk about, which is the buy phase, the own phase, and then the cash flow phase. So we want to build up that net worth. So if we say, let's build $1 million of net worth or $5 million of net worth, what does that mean? That means we want to buy $5 million worth of real estate in order to accumulate and get to that place, that net worth of $5 million. Now, do we do that with all of our own money? No. You know, some with leverage, maybe cash on hand, maybe we buy $500,000 and then we snowball it, you know, by cashing out refinancing and rolling it into your next round of properties. So in the beginning stages of real estate investing, if you're in your 30s, you really shouldn't be focused on the cash flow. You want to make sure that your investment makes sense. And I walk through this whole strategy again, how to know that you're not over leveraged on a property. You want to make sure you're bringing in at least $100 above and beyond what you owe and accounting for expenses, taxes, and all of those things on each property you're buying. But using a bank, buying $1 million, buying $5 million, and then once you have that paid off, now you own it, right? Now you own $5 million. And then is when we can see the cash flow. The cash flow comes later. But so many people start with the cash flow in mind first, and then they forget that we can get there, right? If you're working a normal 9-to-5 job right now, you don't need that cash flow at the moment. Use that cash flow to pay off and own those properties and then enjoy the cash flow later.
Okay, so you're not an advocate of using leverage over the longer term. You're more of an advocate of getting properties paid off in the nearer term or the intermediate term.
I don't want to be in debt for years, like 30 years. What I'm saying is, though, yeah, use leverage, use private money, use crowdfunding, use whatever you can, all the different great concepts out there to acquire real estate. Because remember, when you acquire a $100,000 property, and only putting $20,000 into it, and you have that on the backs of the bank, you own $100,000 on your taxes. You're able to depreciate $100,000 even though you only put $20,000 into it. So you're building a tax shelter, you're building net worth, but you put $20,000 into it or 20% into it. Great. Now find ways to continue to snowball that money using other people's money and build up that nest egg. You can look at yourself and say, well, okay, I have the extra cash flow from these tenants to pay these off more quickly. Now I own them free and clear. Now I can leverage them in a way that I couldn't before. Maybe I can refinance them, pull them together, and take $1 million out from those properties and buy another $1 million and grow from there. And that's how I think you can really, really grow your portfolio.
Yeah, I guess that's really the big personal decision for an investor. Do they want to use that cash flow to enhance their lifestyle and or leverage into more property, or do they want to go ahead and take that cash flow and focus on paying existing loans down?
Exactly. And we do that strategy. We take that cash flow from those properties. We rarely use it. We literally funnel it right back into paying down principal balances or acquiring more real estate. So we're not really sitting there just sort of lavishing that cash flow.
And then where does the freedom number, where does that fit into that strategy of buy, own, and cash flow toward $1 million?
Well, the freedom number is the place to start. It's the place to understand where you're going and really to get a handle on, okay, is it $10,000 a month that we need to live comfortably and be covered totally? We'll talk to investors who will call us with like 30 different strategies. You know, I want to do this. I think this. I'm not sure about this. I've got a HELOC. I want to try this. And they're all over the place. But they really don't even know why, because they haven't figured out that first step, which is trying to get a handle on what kind of a lifestyle do they want. So when I look at the freedom cheat sheet, to me, and the freedom number, I look, that's where you want to start. At least you have a roadmap. Is it 12 properties? Is it 15 properties? And what will that do to your net worth? What will that do to your lifestyle now that you can claim these things on taxes and depreciate these assets over time? Now you're changing and mitigating your overall tax burden from your 401k job, you know, your W-2 job. You're totally transforming your life once you can have a little bit of a roadmap in place in order to start to buy real estate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rhone. That's R-H-O-N-E. You've got to check out Rhone. Fantastic clothing for men. I absolutely love them. In fact, if you've watched a video I've recently done on our YouTube channel, you've got to check it out, where I'm selling everything in the house. Well, I just shot a new video where I've gone through my closet and I've just gotten rid of so much old clothes. You know, it just starts creeping up on you. You just buy stuff over the years and half the stuff I've never worn or it's shrunk. It doesn't look good anymore. I'm like, why am I hanging on to this old ugly polo shirt? For nostalgia reasons? It's ridiculous. It doesn't fit well. And my wife said, hey, what about that new polo shirt you just bought? Like, that looks good on you. Well, what she was talking about is Rhone, R-H-O-N-E. They have a new commuter collection out and it's fantastic. And I said to my wife, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw out just about everything in my closet and I'm going to buy a few really nice shirts from Rhone, some nice polos from this company, and I'm going to buy some t-shirts from them as well. And that's all I'm going to wear. I'm done. I'm done with all these random shirts and outfits that I never wear anymore. Gone. They're all donated. So what is Rhone? You're missing out. You're really missing out. I didn't know about them until recently, until I bought a couple of their shirts and I loved them. They make performance lifestyle and premium activewear. It's engineered to an unparalleled quality and comfort. They're absolute necessity for guys on the go. And they've got this new commuter collection that just came out with pants, polo shirts, shorts, and shirts that are all lightweight, comfortable, wrinkle-free. The commuter collection is good for all weather, anytime, from a weekday in the workplace to a weekend barbecue. I wore it to a business meeting, and I wore it on the golf course. So that's how good it is. And it's so lightweight, and I think my favorite part is that it's wrinkle-free. I mean, that might be my favorite part. It's wrinkle-free and comfortable, and I just don't worry about it like all, you know, when you got like just one cotton kind of shirt, it just shrinks like crazy. And that's not the case here at all. I love their stuff. I really do. So here's what you're going to do. You can get 20% off. For Father's Day, that's great. Maybe buy yourself something, right? Or if any ladies listening out there want to get the husbands in their life something great for Father's Day, pick up a great polo shirt from the commuter collection at Rhone. Here's what you do to get 20% off. Just go to rhone.com. That's Rhone. That's how you spell Rhone. rhone.com/investing to get your 20% off code. That's rhone.com/investing. Promo code investing for 20% off. That's rhone.com/investing. Again, that promo code investing. Thank you, Rhone. I love your stuff. My closet has never looked so good.
So does the freedom number, does that culminate in a net worth number like $2,355,810, or does that culminate in a monthly passive income stream number like $11,700? Where does that go? And this helps tell us what's important.
Right. So for me, the freedom number is really the passive income goal.
Yeah.
And so once we start to think more strategically about what is the net worth goal, that's sort of like the second step. That's when we can start to see, all right, now I'm wrapping my brain around how much expenses I have every month and the passive income goal that will get us to covering that. Now I'm hit financial freedom. Now I can start to think about building legacy wealth, right? Now I can really start to think about going beyond just that. Okay, it took me 12 properties to be financially free. Now what I want to get to 20, I want to get to 30. I want to start really building that legacy wealth for my family. So I look at it in sort of in two stages, you know, freedom number and that legacy number. Now, what is that legacy number for you and your family? This my wife and I were talking about the other night over dinner. You know, we hit financial freedom, but what's next? Where do we want to take things now? And what do we want to do? And that's where we're having a deeper discussions about what will our sort of legacy look like.
Yeah, I like that it culminates in a passive income goal, because really, in a sense, something I've talked about on my show too, is that wealth can be defined as the length, the number of months or years that your passive income will support you for your chosen lifestyle. And yeah, the freedom number can sure help you figure that out. And part of that passive income goal is having those tenant rents come in. What's the durability of that cash flow stream look like? That's what gives us confidence that passive income is going to support us for our chosen lifestyle. And what really makes that income stream durable is the quality of your team and your property manager. Your property manager is really what makes that income recur month after month for you. So talk to us about some of the strategies that you found, Clayton, for finding and vetting the best team, especially that key property manager that's so underappreciated. And yet at the same time, they might be the most important part of this entire thing to help you find your freedom number.
Right. One thing you have to remember is that property managers are human beings. Every piece of real estate investing involves human beings, every stage of it. And there's nothing you can't fix in this business. That's the way I look at it. You know, we always say our clients, we're not perfect. There's something's going to break. Well, you can always fix it, right? And I think it's so important when you're building a team. That's what we've done with our property managers that we partner with, is that they're on our team. They have the best interest of our clients at heart. They don't nickel and dime our clients. And so when you're vetting a property manager for the first time, if they come across as almost institutional in structure, meaning you're just a number on a chart that flows through in some sort of a factory setting, here's an example of what rubbed me the wrong way. So a property is going through an eviction. If you have 30 properties, you're going to have an eviction at some point. It's just something you've got to deal with.
Sure.
So they're going through an eviction process. But then in the meantime, nickel and diming you, something's showing up on your statement, like a pest bill for $400. Why are you charging me $400 for pest control while I'm also losing money on an eviction? And you just charged me $200 like 3 months ago for pest control. Like that nickel and diming where there's no rhyme or reason for it. Like that's the kind of stuff that bothers me. We worked with a property management company, which we don't anymore, but we had a few of our clients with this property manager, and we basically fired him and said, you know, these like charges were showing up on people's bills for $200 because they don't have to approve anything below $200. And there was all like unnecessary things that were popping up there. We had just renovated the property. This stuff shouldn't be on there. They didn't have our clients' best interests at heart. They didn't treat them as if they were part of the team. And so you really want to have that sort of hands-on approach where things are going to happen in the background. Things are going to be taken care of that you don't even know about. And they're just there. They're on your team. They have boots on the ground. Here's another really important point, is that I don't care much about the software. It is nice to have some of the bells and whistles of different software that property managers use sometimes, but it's not a one size fits all. And most of the property management software is pretty terrible. And so assuming that a property management company uses some of the software, very often it only works about 80% of the time. And it's actually very often more of a frustration for property managers to have this software in place. They spend tens of thousands of dollars to acquire it, and it just can be a royal pain for a lot of people. So when people tell me that, oh, we've got great software and this is what we do, I'm like, great, I don't really care about the software. How many people do you have out in the field, leasing agents, showing properties at 7 o'clock at night? where is your money spent? Is it on the leasing agents, like boots on the ground, people who are putting signs in the yard? Or is it spent with one person in the office who's just putting up an ad on Craigslist? I want to know where they're spending their money. So the property managers that we use have people who are in the field, who know the neighborhoods, who develop relationships, sort of more of a human touch. I almost say like sort of old school. Old school, like bedside manner is what I like for my property managers.
Yeah, that's right. And I agree that there's an awful lot of property management software out there that's, I'm going to call it, not very intuitive. I mean, you can get updates that way by logging into your portal, but sometimes they don't have the best and most user-friendly interface. It takes a little time to interpret what's going on when you begin a relationship with a new property manager. Well, Clayton, you've given some really valuable stuff out today. How can our audience learn more about you and your resources?
Well, I'm pretty accessible. If you like listening to podcasts, like you like listening to Keith's show, I mean, we publish our Investing in Real Estate podcast. It's a very generic name. I know it's boring, but it serves its purpose. The Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. My wife joins me on Wednesday's episodes where we talk about family planning for your real estate journey, like how to account tax structure, your LLCs, how we do all of that internally in the family. So I think it could be really helpful, especially if you have like a spouse who's like, oh, my spouse is not on board with this. Just have them listen to our show, and I think you'll get a good sense of like how the husband and wife can work together and how we've been able to achieve financial freedom. And we sort of walk you through step by step how to do that. And then, yeah, my website is just morrisinvest.com.
Clayton Morris, thanks so much for coming on to Get Rich Education.
Thanks so much, Keith. Great pleasure.
There you go. Thanks, Keith, for having me on the show. Really appreciate that. We will be back tomorrow with another episode of the Investing in Real Estate show. By the way, if you are interested in picking up your very first rental property or expanding your portfolio and you want a team, an excellent team that will take care of everything for you, go ahead and book a call with my team. Just go to morrisinvest.com, click on the schedule a consultation button. It's free. It's 30 minutes. We'll jump on the phone, figure out what your goals are, help you discover maybe unlocking your self-directed IRA, pulling from your 401k, helping you get financing and leverage to buy your first rental property. And we're building some brand new construction properties that I would love for you to take a part in as well. So go ahead and book a call with us. If not, we will see back here on Thursday for another episode of the Investing in Real Estate show. Thanks, everyone.